victory. These are the obstacles that I encounter. And this is what I had a chance to do with him. And I get to be in this room with these really decent, beautiful people. It's not a Hallmark card. It's real. And we are the people. This guy from Bombay, India, Dr. Joe, went 1975. I was 1 year sober. And he came to speak at the International Convention in Denver, and it's the only one I've ever been to. And Dr. Joe stands up and he says, Alcoholics Anonymous is humanity on the scrap heap talking to each other in terms of the truth. So we're those people who weren't going to make it. We're the town drunk. We're the loser. We're the failures. We're the ones who had to listen to this sentence over and over and over when we were growing up. You have such potential. You have such potential. When are you going to realize this potential? And we're in there thinking, yeah, when am I going to realize this potential? When's that going to happen? And I got kicked out of all these schools, and I wanted to be a priest. I got kicked out of all my Catholic schools. I wanted to be a priest. When am I going to get a shot to be something more than the guy who's always getting kicked out? You know, when I got kicked out of school in the eighth grade, I went home and drank a bottle of creme de menthe. It was all I could find. Yuck. But it had the magic ingredient, you know. Let's kill the pain. Let's not watch Mickey get kicked out one more time. And now I actually get invited to come and be with you. What a life, huh? Some roller coaster ride. 5, 6, and 7. We are on the fast track to freedom here, huh? You got anything else or we take a break?
Do I want to have the defects removed? Oh, I can't. I've been praying to God, but they're not going because I don't want them to, because there's a payoff. God, please take this lust from me. Please take this greed from me. But I really don't want it to go. It just takes care of my guilt and remorse over my behavior. Am I really willing to have them go? Here's some of the things that get in the way of letting go of defects is my sense of identity is attached to them. It's who I think makes me. The sense of self doesn't come from mind or thought. It comes from spirit, but I never give that a chance. I get wrapped up in my own sense of identity from my defects of character. And having them removed is like being opened and standing before others in the raw. And I've never done that before. How do I do this? So I'll you know, faith without works is dead. I'll claim God. I'll claim willingness to let go of these defects. But it's really only with the pure intent that the ground is going to get fertile for new growth. I'm back to step one again. Have I forgotten where we started out and willing to go to any length to be made new? That worst day of my life, I don't care where you took me, just get me out of here. And suddenly the wrinkles are out of my belly and I'm thinking along my terms rather than God's. And I just mouth the words to be free. I like my defects. There's a payoff to it. There's a payoff to my wounds. You feel sorry for me. I get attention. It's a sense of self, a false sense of self. And I'm still honoring everything the mind gives me. So again, I'm in the 7-step prayer, and the more broken I feel, the better. Our book says the more hopeless we feel, the better. There's only one place to turn to, and it's God, and he's going to do what he wants with me. It's got to be better than the mess I've created, even in the 7-step prayer. Just one quick thing, and we'll take a break, and we'll come back and do 8 and 9, is when I'm doing my 5th step, I got turned on to something years ago about something called multiple 5th steps, which is personal persons. I sit with the sponsor, and maybe some of the people he's sponsoring who are on this path and understand what we're doing. And I get to share this with more than one person, taking the direction from my sponsor, but I've done this. I've sat with my sponsor and maybe one or two men that he was sponsoring, and I get to share my life more and more and more with other people. My 4th step. And the benefit of that is more people knew about me, knew my truth, and the payoff was more freedom. And there's nothing wrong. I don't want to discount sitting with the sponsor, and that's all. That's great. But I was willing to go any lengths. I was given these instructions, not knowing what was going to happen, and it was actually a pretty neat experience. And every time I've sat down to deliver my fourth step to a sponsor, I really prayed hard that they'd call in sick that day and couldn't hear it, you know, because it still made me uncomfortable. I said, oh, here we go. What's going to happen now? Where we? What they're going to call me on? And but you get free. And so 6 and 7, I think Mickey said it best. If you take these two steps out, what are we left with? Right? How do I go and make amends riddled with defects? By the way, if you notice, when you're starting to make amends, I mean really out there making amends, a lot of them have those defects begin to stop breathing. It's called entering the world of the spirit. So, we'll take a break?
Yep.
Okay. Take a break.
That magic moment. So, we're going to go in and we're going to spend a few minutes on the questions that are in the Ask It basket for about 10-15 minutes, and then we're going to go and do 8 and 9, and then we're going to go to church, and whoever else is going to go to Mass, that's happening at 5 o'clock. And then the night will follow from there. So why don't we, Peter, would you like to grab a question out of the basket?
All right. It says, the difference between God reliance and a God of my convenience. I guess they want us to explain that.
I'm going to let you handle this one, Peter. Okay. I think you're really in the middle of that one, man.
Self-will and proper use of the will. That's what this reminds me of. God reliance is everything in my life. I depend upon God. I surrender to God. And when I have a God of my convenience, it means I'm still living life on my terms and not on God's terms, which means my belly's always going to get full, and I really don't care if your belly's full. I'm a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. I'm living all over page 52. Quite frankly, I'm on page 62, which talks about selfishness and self-centered. That is the root of my troubles, and I think God is signing up for that. A God of my convenience means I am God. And this God, me, signs off on everything that I endorse. It's a very wide road, which I'm walking in, a dangerous road. God reliance is a little bit different. I'm living by someone else's rules, his rules.
Thank you. The question, or the question is this. I went from being homeless last summer to reinventing myself. I have a car and an apartment. I have a good job that I love. I recently got a promotion at my job. How can I remain humble and not get all full of myself, big shotism in AA? Well, you know, it is a daily disease. We have this disease. And, you know, fair weather or foul, we work our program. We do our steps. We surrender our lives and our wills to God in the morning. We proceed into our day. We continue to watch for the four things, fear, dishonesty, resentment, and selfishness, in our 10-step throughout the day. We do our nightly review. We think about the other guy. We work with others. We do these principles and practices. And it's interesting that in World War II, according to our book, the people who went to war stayed sober more successfully by proportion than the people who stayed home. So this is a design for living, the big book says, that works in the rough going. And success can be rough going when you've had nothing but rough going. So that would be my answer. Okay.
Okay. This book talks about this. Okay. When Silkworth wrote that the craving never occurs in the average tempered drinker, it is implied that heavy drinkers don't get the craving. Is it possible for someone to experience the craving only a few times and actually be a heavy, hard drinker, a and not a real alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. I experience only the craving. I don't know what goes on in these hard drinkers or the social drinkers, how much of an impulse they have to continue to drinking. So I really can't answer that question, being a non-alcoholic. I mean, from
I'm sorry, from would you repeat the question?
Okay. I'm sorry. All I know is I drink, I crave. So I can't talk about an experience I never had before. Okay, I'd be playing doctor right now, or psychiatrist, or chemist even. Okay.
Thank you. The question is, can I have Al-Anonism and alcoholism? Some things Marie said resonated with me, but I know I'm an alcoholic too, from Dazed and Confused. Certainly. Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right? Because, as Marie pointed out in her talk, it is amazing how many of us alcoholics start attending Al-Anon meetings, and we're getting tremendous help and information. So, yes, we can have both of these things, but I would suggest that we, you know, it's like I wanted to quit smoking when I first got sober, and my sponsor says to me, Mickey, he says, look, why don't we put that off for a little bit, because he says, I don't want you to get out there and forget which one of them will kill you immediately. So I just kept smoking for a while, and I attended to my alcoholism, and now I haven't had a cigarette in 37 years. Thank you, God.
I just got something on that last question. And it seems to be trying to distinguish if I'm a hard drinker or an alcoholic. And I'm just put this out there, the person who wrote that, are you not sure? Are you trying to find out if you're an alcoholic or just a hard drinker or perhaps someone that's close to you, you're trying to make any determination on them? A little craving once in a while. I only have a little craving once in a while, but I'm not one of them. So, Pete, can you answer this question for me? Just tell me I'm a heavy social drinker with alcoholic overtones, as someone once said. Right? No, seriously, that sounds like a question somebody's fishing. And if you are, I get it. And then maybe if you want to talk to one of the guys privately or one of the women privately, depending on, you know. I'm just wondering if someone's fishing. Okay.
I think that's good. Go ahead. What do you say to an AA-er who stops sharing thoughts and feelings because they think that by working a program, they should, quote, know better, unquote, and not have such thoughts and feelings? Well, this is important. That by working a program, they should know better. Alcoholism, that's why I talked about the vulture. I wake up in the morning and the vulture's on the end of the bed. It's like, good morning, I'm going to take you out. Oh, okay. I'm not going to stop talking about my feelings and my thoughts because I have alcohol todayism. Alcoholism today. And it never goes away. I got news. It's going to go away, God bless you, when I cross the river and I go home. And until that time, I'm going to have alcoholism up until the moment I die. We don't work this. It's a really interesting thing. What is my hidden agenda again? What's my agenda? My agenda is I'm going to work this program until my disease goes away. Well, that's a really dangerous one. Let's not do that one. Okay.
It says, what are your suggestions for someone who at one time work their program with the sponsor, had a spiritual awakening, but then stopped participating in the program and fellowship and has not relapsed, but is still suffering. How does one come back into the program without relapsing? Okay, there's a couple of things here. One of my concerns is working their program. It's the program that's in the book, and we don't modify it for ourselves. And the word relapse, what they mean is drinking, but the relapse precedes the drink. We go sideways before we actually pick up a drink. So whoever wrote this is probably in relapse mode right now, just hasn't drank yet. And how do you come back? Just ask for help and rework the steps. We have to jump through hoops. If you're afraid to do that, it's because the ego has rebuilt itself. Doesn't mean you're a bad person, but you're deep, deeper than you think. Have we really drank? Maybe we cheated a little here and there, a little marijuana maintenance, I don't know. But all you need to do is pull someone aside who's on with the facts and say, I'm hurting, can you take me through the book again? And get on the other side, okay?
How can I ask, and these are capitalized words, how can I ask reason and logic to get out of my head? And then it's a line down, it says politely. First of all, I'm really, really happy that you guys have asked these questions. And sometimes I laugh at all the wrong places, but I'm just absolutely delighted that we're doing this. I think it's great. Okay. Reason and logic. The head and the heart. The head and the heart. Okay, the head is a computer. It wants to know who is God, why is the sky blue, Daddy, how high is up. It wants to know all of this stuff. But the heart just yearns for freedom. The heart yearns for liberation and healing. So I would go to God and say, listen, would you please put my head on stun? So I can live from my heart, because the heart is the heart, especially in the Old Testament, to the Jewish people, heart meant soul. So we're talking soul or head. God, can you please help me live out of my soul?
There's a request here, but it's not on the schedule, nor do we have time to give a pitch. It says, on the 12 traditions, so we're going to have to do that one another time. But thank you.
I'm not going to do much with this one, but here we go. Who wrote Swanee River? The answer, Ed Norton. I don't know. I mean, come on. But I like the question, you know what I mean? It's got soul. Anyway. I can't seem to take initiative to complete amends. What would you recommend? I do want to say this. I mean, obviously, it's an enormously important question. There is a momentum to the spiritual life, okay? And what happens is we can stall out. I don't know what the exact time frame is for making our amends, but there's a momentum to it, and we can start throwing on the brakes and stalling and all that stuff, and what we're doing is death by, procrastination. And what I would recommend is I would recommend that you talk to your sponsor, that you remember, as Peter has said, go back to step one. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? If we want freedom, we need to do this. So, and if there's any blocks up the chain, the best way to get out of being blocked at a particular step is to go to the one before it. Go to the one before it, in my experience, and go to the one before it. So thank you so much for your questions. I hope there was some useful answers. Now we're going to go into 8 and 9, right?
Yep.
On page 76. After we have completed step 7, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. Now, here's where I'm going to get to challenge the big book. Won't that be fun? We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we were willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. That is not true. That is not true. I was out the first time I went and did this thing, and I took that literally, and I took every name on my inventory, and I'm out knocking on doors ad infinitum, and people are saying, Mickey, what are you doing here? You did not hurt me. Do you see what I'm saying? And there are people I hurt that are not in my inventory. I don't have to be resentful at you to hurt you. I just have to be selfish. So, for me, and of course, the big book is our referee. So please, when in doubt, always follow this. I mean, I'm not going to get in the middle. I'm just sharing with you my experience, strength, and hope. So I make a list of all people I have harmed. I write a prayer across the top of the page just like I do with inventory. I make a list of all people I have harmed, whether they're in my inventory or not in my inventory. And I put the name on the left, and I put the exact nature of the harm I think I have caused on the right next to that name. That's my eight-step list. Then I go over it with my sponsor. And what's interesting, when people go over their eight-step list with me, we end up throwing ones out. No, there's no harm there. I understand that you think there's harm. I don't hear any harm in there. You may have guilt. You may have other things that you're trying to work out at that particular moment. But we are there to deal, did I harm you? So, I mean, I guess that's as clean as I can approach it as far as eighth step goes. And then in ninth step, after I've gone over this with my sponsor, I go out and I, you know, there's the famous 3x5 cards where I wrote down exactly what I thought I did, and I'm going to talk with you about it. And then I ask the question, is there anything that I left out? And give them an opportunity to talk with me about other harm that I might have caused. Not out of my own life, but it is interesting that we can become very legalistic about this stuff. We can become legalistic about anything, truly. But in this case, here's what I mean, is like, I am going to make amends, and by God, you are going to listen to him, is how this is going to work. So I got a friend in the program, and he had occasion when he was younger to go into an auto salvage yard and bust out all of the glass in the cars. Now, that's what that man had to sell, was replacement auto glass. So my guy goes up to him and he says, you remember when that happened years ago that all that glass was broken? The guy says, yes. He says, I'm the one that did it and I'm here to make amends. And the guy said to him, which we often hear, thank you, God. Listen, I'm so happy for you that you've gotten your life straightened out and you've become a stand-up guy. And of course, I remember you. I didn't realize you broke the windows. We're good. My guy said, no. I need to pay you. I need to make amends for this. And the guy says, no, we're good. Seriously, I just wish you well. I don't know what else he might have said to him. But my guy stood there in this guy's face so long that this guy now hates my guy. I would submit that that is not building bridges. And it says also, you know, if they don't want to see us, we're good. I had somebody, now, I was secretive. I wanted there to be this nice surprise when I came over to make an amend to you. Right? So I don't know how many people thought I was on an Amway binge or whatever, but I was just trying to do my job. Anyway, I did get out there, and I finally started telling people, listen, I've harmed you. I want to come, and I would like to make amends to you for the harm I've caused. And the one couple did not want to see me. They didn't want to see me again, apparently, ever. And so that was done. I made my approach. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm just talking about exceptions to the rule. There were plenty that I went, and we had to do the thing. I got to do the thing. And I'm not in there for results. I'm in there for my action, for my side of the street, to go in with a decent spirit and a spirit on my side, never taking up what they did. And I had people receive me. The kindness that I was shown was phenomenal. I had people receive me that I really, truly hurt. And they took time out of their lives to meet me. And in the case of certain sexual amends, I was given the advice, it's always important that you meet with that person in public. You meet with them in a public place if they agree to meet with you at all. And so that, two things. One, that they feel safe, okay, with being with me. And the second thing is that we don't strike up the band again. Just saying, you know. I'm there to make amends, for goodness gravy, not get in deeper. And I'm trying to think. I guess that's pretty much it, what I have to say.
Twice in steps 8 and 9, they talk about us going to any lens as a reminder what we're in this deal for, to go to any lens. Because it's real easy about now to start to rest on our laurels or go out and make a few amends, like the effect produced by amends, and rest on our laurels. So here's the consideration that was always given to me. Do I have any outstanding amends today that I could be making and I'm not? Do I claim to have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, or have I had a spiritual awakening as a result of steps of 9 and a half, as one of my teachers would always say, 9 3/4? I still got 30, 40 amends to make. I'll get to them. Besides, it was a long time ago. You know, things are more important now. And I forgot the sense of urgency I walked into step 1 with. Have I really entered the world of the spirit? How could I be present if I'm still driven by voices of the past? How could I move forward with oneness with God? But I still have a past out there that is not fixed. It hasn't been reconciled. It hasn't been processed. Nothing's been done about it. And I'm back to being a selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed individual because I've harmed you, and I'm going to knock on your door and say, hey, can we talk about this? Can I try to make this right? Now, there are people on that list that have no right going to, because I'm going to cause more harm. I'm going to open up an old wound. So I need to use discretion and certainly guidance from a sponsor. And God's timing is always perfect. My timing's never perfect, so I seek counsel. There's going to be people on there, which I had to do many times, go to a sponsor. What do you think? Should I go see this person? Yes, no. One of the most powerful examples of that for me is going to make amends to family. And I wanted to run to my old man, to my dad, and say, hey, listen, here's some money. I'm really sorry for what I did. And my first response is, absolutely not. You need to live this. I'll show you my faith by my works. I'll show you my faith by my actions. That speaks a lot louder than any words I can come up with. And I'm not going to impress anyone with my little 90-day chip. And here I will, out there. It was last week. It's really interesting. People out there who were civilians, the earthlings, aren't impressed with 5 years of sobriety. They say, I haven't drank in 20 years. What's the big deal? They don't get it. I remember I was working as a longshoreman, and there was truck driver down there. And he used to operate machinery, and he was having lunch with a bunch of his friends. And I owe this guy some financial amends, but I also had some sober time. I was just back from Minnesota, and I interrupted his lunch. And I said, whatever the time was, you know, 11 months today or some ridiculous thing like that. And he looked at me like, you're interrupting my lunch. I don't care. In his best Joe Pesci imitation, you know. And I was offended by this. Like, why didn't he get up and congratulate me and buy me lunch and discount the money that I still owe him? Well, he made my inventory that night. Poor me. And my first sponsor, bless his heart, shredded me some more. That I had no right going to do that. Hello, how are you? By the way, you have some time, I owe you money. I had to eventually make amends to him. The thing about amends, which is interesting, especially with financial restitution, and I was shown this early on. If I owe out $1,000 into the universe, some to Joe, some to Mary, some to my employer, whoever the people are, $1,000, and it's not my money, first of all. Now I need to put food in my belly and take care of my family and pay my rent. But if I want to go out and buy, you know, $100 pair of Nikes because they're in style, what I'm doing is I'm stealing now again. I don't need new sneakers, but I want new sneakers, and they cost about $100, we'll say. I don't even know what they cost anymore. I need the Michael Jordan, you know, whatever it is. I need the Xbox. I need that flat screen TV. I really need it. I need it, right? What I'm doing is I'm spending the money I'm supposed to be giving you on my wants, and I'm stealing some more. I'm actually stealing more from you now. It is not my money. That was difficult for me to get because I want a lot of stuff. Until I had to get to a place I understood how my wants get dressed up as needs and convince me. So it's about paying back and getting right with the universe and closing that circle. Which kind of, the circle on a triangle, I use that circle to represent my life. It's a closed circle around the triangle, and I come in here and there's a lot of broken pieces in that circle, a lot of gaps in the circle. And by the time I get to step 9, there's still gaps in that circle. No wonder why I'm not feeling whole and complete. And I go out and start making amends, and I continue making amends, and the indirect amends I make, because I can't make direct amends, I do. Maybe there's some old relationships. I can't go back to those women. So how am I treating women now? Maybe I can't go back to a former employee because it'll implicate other people who aren't giving me permission to go make amends. So I don't steal from my employer anymore. I become a good worker. So there's little things that God allows us to do. And as I start to do that, little by slowly, my personal relationships start to get better. My work life gets better. My health gets better. And things that aren't even connected seem to be connected. I make amends here and that thing cleans up. And the circle gets completed. It gets whole again. No beginning, no end. It just is, like God. No destination. You can't tell the beginning is. Don't know where the end is. It just is complete. And I get an okayness on the inside. Now, some of those muscles had to work hard for them. All coming out of step one, my desire to get God in my life, my desire to experience God. And it says how the most difficult ones can be the most beneficial. Not every amends is a pleasant one. Like you going, oh sure, I remember you. Hey, congratulations, way to go, good to see you. God bless you, and you leave. Some of those people really not too thrilled about seeing us, and we tell them what we're there for. Just give me my money and get out of my office. That happened to me outside of an OTB office. I came out of an attorney's office for something unrelated to AI to do work, and standing across the street was this guy waiting for OTB to open. And I went up to him, and I didn't want to go, but spirit moved me, so you go. And I'm giving him this, I'm recovering now. He says, you owe me money. And then he went on to say, I know you're an old man for a long time. Your old man would have never did what you did. And he started giving me a little lecture. I had to take a little heat. He was telling me without me asking how he felt about it. So I took a little heat. So what? What I did do was the whatever it was, the money I owed him, I gave him more than I borrowed because a whole lot of years had passed and that money wasn't worth the same amount. $20 20 years later, maybe worth about 40 now. So I gave him some extra and he took that willingly. It says here, my purpose is to fit myself to be a maximum service to God and the people around me. Maximum service to God. This isn't about me feeling good. I might feel good out of amends. And it's going to ensure my sobriety. But I'm going to make it right. And at some point on this path of making amends, I know that's what I need to do and I get to do. I need to go. I ripped you off. I hurt you, and I'm acknowledging that. And in some aspects, I'm giving you respect back that I took away from you. It's interesting, too, when we go to make amends to the opposite sex. And I found this with the men I sponsor in my own personal life. Go back to make amends to a woman for inappropriate behavior, perhaps, saying unkind things. At that moment, we break the link or the chain in her life. I've seen this happen where she's just used to accustomed to men trampling through her life because that's all she's worth. And one of us go up and make amends and say, you were treated inappropriately. You don't deserve to be treated that way. You're a child of God just the way I am. I was wrong for what I did. And how can I make this right? Suddenly, oh, you mean there's another way to live? Men can treat me different? You mean I'm worth more than what I've been doing? I've seen that conversion happen. This is doing God's work. Welcome to the NFL. This isn't always touchy feeling. It's all about me. That's a self-centered alcoholic. I need to make amends so I feel good. It's about doing God's work. And sometimes we're going to get our knees scraped and get a couple of bruises along the way. It's part of the awakening. One amends took me 17 years to find a person. Another one took almost as long as I'm sober. It happened maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, about 20-something years. Accidentally locating someone, and their first response was, I thought you were dead. And what's really interesting in talking to this person, how they remembered me and wondered how my one drunk affects six. This whole family would sit down and say, whatever happened to that guy, Peter? He just disappeared. I wonder if he's okay. Is he dead? He must be dead. And, you know, just this thing, they were still disturbed. And how come he went so sideways? And why did he rob from us after treating him so nice? Was all this stuff going on and I show up. I'm able to make that right. 20-something years in the making. And I'll just tell you, the question how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with the person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us as a promise. We go to this person, him or her, in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing my former ill feeling, and expressing my regret. Under no condition do I criticize such a person or argue. I simply tell them I will never get over drinking until I do my utmost to straighten out the past. I'm there to sweep off my side of the street. And I've shared this story a million times. And I guess I'm sharing for someone who's new and has that person they hated on their list. How am I going to do this? I still don't like this person. I had a landlord who I despised at this point in my life. And the guy did some bad things to me. But I was a drunk and a dope fiend renting out an apartment in his house. I was not a good person. He got real ugly with me, threatened me, becoming violent with me, banging on my door all out of the night. Now, some of that was warranted. I mean, can't deny that. But it was, fast forward a couple of years, and here I am in this work, and I'm thinking about what he did to me, not realizing I was a drunk and a dope fiend living in this guy's, you know, renting out an apartment. Almost burned his house down, and just some ugly things. And I hated this man. And I stopped praying to make amends to him, and I saw him in a restaurant, and I had to leave the restaurant because I was sweating bullets. I was not free. I had to get out of there. And I had to go home and write more inventory on this, on my hate for this man. I hated him. What I wanted to do was, I'm ashamed to say, was get him alone and beat the hell out of him. I did. He was, you know, had that Napoleon complex. He was about 3'2", and he thought he was 6'8". You know, and he got right in my face, and I'm busted up. I'm tore up from the floor up. I mean, I'm a mess. And now I'm sober, and I'm thinking, he shouldn't have talked to me that way. And I was angry about this, and I wrote a whole lot of inventory, and I prayed for the willingness to go to any lengths, prayed for the willingness to go to any lengths, and write some inventory, share it with my sponsor, and I wake up on a Sunday morning going about my business, and then it's there. God speaks our language that we could understand, and I got dressed. Because I was told, when you have an appointment, you're going to go see somebody, be the best copy of this big book you can be. I don't go making amends, looking like I'm going to commit a felony in 20 minutes. And so I go to this person's house, and I sit down with financial restitution, and I make it right. And okay, we're done. That's done. I certainly was given a better attitude towards this man, because I finally got to see, hey, how would you react if you had you living in your apartment? I wouldn't have kept me there that long. I would have probably called 911 immediately and get this bum out of here, because that's what I was. And then what happened to me afterwards, I always try to explain this. It's unexplainable. How can I explain that which is unexplainable? But I don't remember walking to my car. I do remember feeling like I couldn't touch the concrete when I was walking. I remember feeling lit up with light. I remember my eyes weeping as this whole thing passed through me. And the next thing I know, it was euphoric. That's putting it mildly, but I really can't explain what was going on. But I don't remember the drive home. And I was living in Bay Ridge, and this was in Bensonhurst. So it wasn't a long drive, but it took a few minutes on a Sunday morning. But I can't to this moment recall the drive home. I just remember leaving his house and having this moment. Bill describes a white light experience, if you want to call it that, to give you an idea what was going on. I didn't say to myself, oh, wow, I'm having a spiritual experience. I can't wait to get to home group and tell everybody. There was no thought. There was this gap of no mind going on. Actors call it being in the moment, where you're not thinking about the part you're playing. You are the part. Well, I guess I'm just trying to create something here, what was going on. And that changed my whole life. The ground was really fertile. And it came by making an amends I did not want to go make. And so first time through to work, probably in the neighborhood of 200 direct amends that I made the first time through to work. It's lessened over the years because I don't cause harm like I used to. But I still stand willing to go make this. And anytime I'm not willing to make amends, I have a first step problem. I thank God that hasn't happened so far. And as I clean up amends, my book tells me I've entered the world of the spirit. It says this thought brings us to step 10. Which thought? That I'm cleaning up amends. And I may not have all of them done yet, but I'm actively seeking out these folks. I didn't make 10 and hang out and rest on my laurels. So as of today, as far as I know, I'm current. Right now, I'm current. My amends, I don't have any outstanding amends that I'm currently aware of right now. I'm up to debt with creditors and things like that. And as far as I know, anyone I've harmed, I've taken care of. The day's still young, so who knows what will happen. But I'm up to date. I'm current. And what I've learned from this is intuitive thinking comes from being current. So the best way for me to show you my beliefs and my faith is by my actions. All right. That's all I got. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Peter. I mentioned earlier that there is a momentum to the spiritual life. And we can stall out. Now, we have made a contractual arrangement with God at step 3. The deal we have said is, you know, I'll do what you want. If you'll give me my life, I'll go with you. And we act on that in the middle step work of 4 through 9. That's how we complete the contract. And the guy told me one time, he said, Mickey, you may or may not have meant your third step, or taking your third step decision seriously. He said, but I'll guarantee you that God did. Okay? So I get up, I'm rocking and rolling, and I'm 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, and in 9, one night I woke up and I can't recall ever having been so terrified. Ever. Not when I was a kid, not ever. I woke up and there was something in that room with me, is the way it felt. And I was paralyzed. I thought, my God, what is in this room with me? I don't understand what's going on. And there was a guy in AA that I truly disliked. I referred to him earlier as the head thug. But here's what it was. Now, I'm in serious trouble. He didn't live that far from me, or I didn't live that far from him. So it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I picked up the phone, and who did I call? I called him, because I got big trouble in Little China over here. And so he said, here was his reaction at 3 o'clock in the morning. He says, Mickey, why don't you come over for a cup of coffee? Right? That I will never forget that. So I'm going over there, man, and I am like Ichabod Crane making it from my house to his house on foot. You know, I got the headless horseman, I feel like, after me, and we're laughing about it, but I'm seriously, seriously terrified. I don't know what's wrong. Something's on me. So I get over to his apartment. He lets me in. We sat and talked until dawn about postures of meditation, about this and that and the other thing. And he, right before dawn, he says to me, excuse me, have you made all your amends? No, I said, I got 2 amends that I haven't made. He said, oh my God, we could have cut our time down to nothing if I had known that. You made an agreement, Mickey, at the third step. You made a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand him. You made that decision, and God took you seriously on it, and you broke the contract. And what happened was my program started to roll up backwards. And I have seen this now in my experience. So, I mean, I got out of that thing. It was the day before the internet and all that. But I found out you could go to the phone company, and they had, I didn't know how to find these people. I found that they had addresses from phone books for every city in the United States. And I was able to look them up. And I found those 2 people. I put those letters in the mail, and bingo, my life started to be all right. So I've told people, listen, don't go into amends and not do them. Please do not do that. I said, your program will roll backwards on you. And I've seen it happen every single time. So, you know, that's what I would call what I just did there as a New England moment. One of the things I loved about living in New England was going into the cemeteries. You get the really old headstones, and the headstones are going like, beware, pilgrim, you know, and they're giving you a lesson from the other side. I'm sharing with you something that has true value, and I've seen it in my life. We are, I guess we're done for 8 and 9. Now, I guess we have a couple of options. We could take a few more of these for a few minutes. You want to?
Sure.
All right. We'll do a little more Ask It Basket, and then we'll call it a night for the STEP workshops. And we have speaker to come and dinner and... Oh, mine says, how do you finish your 4th step if you have no recollection or have blocked out part of your past? Listen, I'm only held responsible for what I know or for what I can remember. Again, my experience is that stuff will surface in due time if it's supposed to. So for my answer to that question, I would just move on with what you've got. Don't worry about the blanked out parts. When I say blanked out parts, I went to a funeral once with some of my high school classmates, and this girl turned to me and she says, hey, do you remember that time when your girlfriend was in the hospital with a kidney problem and you went out with that French girl and we had a picnic? God, I froze on the spot. No, I don't remember it. To this day, I don't remember it. I can't take responsibility for what I cannot remember unless somebody shows me, I mean, up in my face on it. What can I do? Okay.
It says, when will I know when I have turned my will and my life over to the care of God 100%? Well, the first thing I'm thinking of is when you're not thinking about it. And what do your actions say?
Okay.
And who needs to know? If I need to know that, I'm coming from a place of ego. If I'm just being and my actions are doing God's will, then this question becomes a moot point.
Is sharing your fifth step with others in your network similar to steal on steal, number one, and or two, spiritual consent? I may not be the brightest bulb in the marquee here, but Peter, can I refer this one to you? Because you had that shared fifth step thing. Maybe you have some feelings on this.
I'll get back to you on Monday. What does it say? Is sharing your fifth step with others in your network similar to steal? Is sharing your fifth step with others in your network similar to steal on steal? No. Steal on steal is a completely different exercise. It's a wonderful exercise. And spiritual consent. Well, when I go to someone and ask them, I go to Mick, say, Mickey, can you sponsor me? And he says, I will. I've given him spiritual consent. Steel on steel, we're giving each other three or four, no more than four, spiritual consent to kind of call each other on stuff. So we can never say, well, I never asked you for your input. So spiritual consent, the spiritual law, spiritual consent is given in all these. As far as sharing a fifth step with multiple persons, sponsor always has to be top dog. And he or she might direct me to go sit with Joe and let him here do a multiple fifth step with Joe. Some people like to, a male might want to share an inventory with a woman to get a woman's perspective on some of the inventory. I've heard that being done. I've never done that. But steel on steel is different than doing a fifth step. And if you want to share with people in your network, so be it. Just as long as they understand what you're doing, and that's a life and death errand. And what can be dangerous if my network is don't drink and go to meetings, put the plug in a jug, and I'm a big book guy.
Or I'm shopping things around to these guys that I'm not willing to share with my sponsor, or I've gotten an answer from my sponsor, and I'm going, yeah, but, you know, what about another opinion, a second opinion? I know, plus you're ugly. I know, we've gone down that one.
Give an example of praying the resentment prayer specifically for an institution or principal in the fourth column. My book tells me, though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturb us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful? God save me from being angry. Your will, not mine, be done. I hope that helps a little bit. Right? I think I'm getting that right.
All right. How do I know if I'm doing God's will? This is a very important question, right? I mean, the whole program is about doing God's will or cooperating with God's will. How do I know that I am doing God's will? Well, we have the big book. There is a morality, for instance, in the big book. If it's selfish, dishonest, resentful, or frightened, it's wrong. So it can bounce up against that. And I mentioned it earlier, a good tree bears good fruit. Is what I'm doing bearing good fruit or bad fruit? So how do I know for absolute certain that I'm doing God's will? I don't know. God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. So we didn't abandon our common sense at the front door when we came in here. So we're living a reasonable life. And besides that, odds are you'll know it in your gut if you're not doing God's will. All right. We're almost there. Beautiful handwriting. Beautiful. Is this person a nun? No, I'm just kidding. This nun's had great... Okay. Is it better to try to be in lasting, healthy, romantic relationship with another recovering alcoholic or someone that is not an alcoholic or drug addict? Well, it is better to cooperate with God's will regardless of whether this person is a recovering alcoholic or drug addict or not. I'm going to deviate off over in here for a second. So it says, now we've done our sex inventory, and you know, and then we're going to, in this way, God will show us an ideal for our future sex life, right? Now we've gotten this movement somehow in AA where we're now going to draw up and write up a sex ideal for our partner. That is not what the big book says to do. It says, do your sex inventory, make your amends, and in this way, God will show you how to have a sane and sound sex life, right? So I would say that probably the best course to follow would be to work your program, right? And in the course of that, God will give you someone or not. It was never in my sex ideal to marry a stone atheist, and that is who I got. Okay, her family was stone atheists. She was a lovely atheist. But God knew best, you know, and now we share a faith and all of that stuff, which, P.S., I never asked her to do. I never asked her to convert to my faith. Because, you know, guess what? That's God's daughter, and they have to work that out together. And then she surprised me with that, which I'm delighted about. Are we done? Thank you very much for your kind attention and your participation. There is such a thing as active listening, and you have really and truly been active in listening to us. And gosh almighty, I can only imagine how tired you must be. So thank you for a beautiful day in your company. And we're going to go to church.